Black Talk Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium. Opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium. Tuned in to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed. I'm broadcasting from behind the enemy lines of USA Inc. Today's date, it is September. It's just 10 days left in this month. I think there's only 30 days in September, but it is September the 20th in the year that they call 2016. Just discussing earlier with the host of Change Matters Solutions, which comes on at 11 a.m. Eastern on Tuesdays here on the network. But we were discussing just how fast time is going by, really, really. And so it's like we don't have a lot of time to work on these issues and usher in a better existence for all on this planet. We really don't. We really don't have time to be waiting. And that is demonstrated by yet another video, just not this video, but a mountain of videos of, and I haven't watched it, but I have seen stills from the videos because I don't need to watch these police snuff films in order to know that they are happening. I've seen enough of them. I read enough reports. I continue to read the reports, but I can't watch the videos. I just can't do it. So that is being demonstrated in the latest killing of yet another black man. This happened in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Whenever we mention Tulsa, we think about all the black people who were killed that were associated with Black Wall Street, although there were many Black Wall Streets. But whenever we think Black Wall Street, we think of Tulsa, Oklahoma. And this is where Mr. Terrence Crutcher was killed. And the officer that killed him that works for the Tulsa Slave Catchers, let me see if I can locate her name right quick. It was a female who made the killing this time. Let me see if I can find her number. But the pilot also was heard talking about he looked crazy or he looks like a bad dude might be on something. So this is the helicopter pilot, and he's heard on the video. Now, they called out a helicopter on a broke-down black motorist. A 40-year-old black man. So Betty Shelby is the officer's name. And it's also important to mention that she had just completed some drug awareness training that where she can identify, just look at people and be able to identify somebody's on drugs. And that's the defense that she's trying to use in the murder. We all saw it. But the defense that she's trying to use for the murder of Mr. Crutcher was that he looked like he was on PCP. So, I mean, that's, we could bring the drug war in, into it. And what is the drug war? Well, we go back to the man who created it in 1971, the modern drug war. Richard Nixon, his chief of staff, would say that they created the drug war to target black people and hippies. So, now, in related news, as I stated, we do have a guest for you today, and we're going to talk about related subject matter, but it's pertaining to the largest state in the so-called Union, California, and it has a ballot initiative, which I believe, with the blessings or with a push from the political clout used by the governor, to put this on the ballot for state voters in California. And I have looked at this legislation, and it could free victims of modern-day slavery and human trafficking. It focuses on those. It focuses on parole for nonviolent criminals. Let me just read the title. It's California Proposition 57, Parole for Nonviolent Criminals in Juvenile Court Trial Requirements. So this is also pertaining to affecting the enslavement of children that goes on in these juvenile courts. And it's just a shame, though, but a teenager would consider themselves lucky not to be charged as an adult. If you just look at the reports over the last two decades or so. So, you know, that's just where we're at today. That's where we're at. We don't have a lot of time to fix these issues, but wherever we can bring relief, we should do so to anybody that is suffering from this criminal injustice system. So we are going to talk to author and activist from California. So this is a personal for him, and he wrote this article, Why I Am Voting Yes on Prop 57, as that bill is known by most people discussing it. We have Mr. LaRon Barton. Sir, is that you on the line at 415?
Yes, it is, Scotty.
All right. Thank you for joining us today on short notice. I thought it wasn't.
Allowing me, man. Like, this is the fourth time. This is almost kind of feeling like a home away from home. So, you know what I'm saying?
Of course.
But, I mean, no, though, but seriously, Scotty, thank you for allowing me to come on the show to talk about the essay as well as Prop 57. So, really appreciate that.
And I failed to mention in my introduction to today's program about the ongoing strikes. And I have linked to the Google News feed on prison strike. And that is the hashtag that's being used on social media as well. But there has been some new news. There's a report coming out of Alabama, and they're trying to play down its impact and say it only occurred at one prison, Holman Prison. And, of course, that is the home of the quote-unquote leaders, or we would just say individuals who have shown leadership and stepped up to the plate associated with the Free Alabama movement. And so there's a report from there. There's some other reports came from Truth Out. But again, as I stated on Time for Awakening Radio, I also may have published a video. But I'm also just disappointed that more independent black media has not covered this. And,
right. You
know, even including the corporate media, because I saw possibly one of the best news segments I ever seen on corporate media by Roland Martin. Now, that is said to be owning, you know, but it is an integrated corporation. I'm not sure the name that runs News One. Is that the channel he's on, LaRon?
Yes, it is.
So I think Kathy Hughes might own that. I'm not sure. But
I think Kathy Hughes does on News One.
But he gave one of the best segments I have seen in years, and the subject matter was Colin Kaepernick's protests and Bill O'Reilly trying to chastise Colin Kaepernick and tell Colin Kaepernick to buy Bill O'Reilly's book he just put out on patriotism. And Jesus. And what made the segment so great was that they showed you all the titles in the books written about and by black veterans, about Jackie Robinson, who also wrote a book, and he was just naming off. I mean, this, he should have got an Emmy just for that segment, and the producers, whoever put that together. But I'm still disappointed that I haven't seen to date him do at least one segment on the prison strikes.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things, Scotty, where it's you know, if it's not heard, if it's not seen, it's not heard from. And just the fact that, oh well, these people are in prison, so you know they have to be bad people. They can't have rights. They're not supposed to want to seek freedom or want to seek justice. So I mean, it's kind of a twist on respectability politics. I mean, you know, which it's sad that, you know, people such as Roland Martin and other notable black news people, lack of a better term, such as Joy Reid, you know, haven't really spoke about that. But this is why we have your program, because I mean, you know, you're giving an unfiltered, you know, raw, realistic look into the news. I mean, you're not owned by anybody. Like, you know, you don't have a white puppet master like, you know, Joy Reid does, or, you know, you're not trying to, you know, speak to the black respectability class like Roland Martin does. And I just want to say that, you know, I, along with others, definitely appreciate it.
Well, thank you for that, and I do understand the value of this program, and not just this program, but some of even the other independent stations associated with the platform. So, but you know, it's still sad, because I also communicated through social media to the National Association of Black Journalists. You know, and they're going to be hosting some event with Hillary Clinton, is going to be speaking to them. And
yeah, man, yeah. It's sad, isn't it?
Yes, I mean, and it does underline the importance of independent black media. But then even those who are well-known in black independent, and I'm not going to call no names. Y'all had to go listen to Brother Elliott's show, Time for Awakening, in the last 30 minutes. I named some names. I'm not going to call out anybody today, but well-known pundits and what have you, and they have their own platform, and I dare say they reach millions of black people through social media and YouTube and what have you, and collectively only one report. But I do want to give a shout out again to those who have, that's Black Agenda Report, that is Democracy Now!, that is the Real News Network based in Baltimore, and many other blogs and what have you, and organizations putting information out about it. So there is, but I'm just still disappointed because that I thought all black people was united on these issues. You know what I'm saying? I thought that's why we were talking about this criminal justice reform. Even the mainstream people are supposed to be on board. Then why would you not report on, number one, as a journalist with the historic nature of this, why would you not cover this?
Well, you know what, man, I, again, you know, it's funny, like, I was talking with someone about, you know, about different black folks, and, you know, I said, you know what, like, after Barack Obama is out of office, black people are going to have a discussion about class, you know, because, I mean, I think that, you know, a lot of us still, I mean, we still aspire to be the, I believe W.B. Du Bois coined it, the talented 10. You know, a lot of us still want to separate ourselves from, you know, those Negroes. You know, like, we want to seem like, you know, oh well, you know, we're not out here snatching purses, you know, snorting cocaine and stealing cars. You know, we're going to college, we're buying homes, you know, we're attaining the American dream. And so it's, you know, I totally agree with you, man. I mean, it's like you wish that black people were united. But again, man, I mean, you know, Scotty, it's just like what you had said. You know, we have VGQ, and, you know, we're all victims of racism. So we're going to internalize that, and we're going to move within the system different ways. I mean, I wish we would all move on one accord, but that's just not possible. So, you know, it is what it is, man.
I believe it's possible, but it's going to be a bottom up. It's going to have to be a bottom up effect or strategy, which really I think social media has demonstrated that in the past, and they have pushed stuff. And I have talked to at least one person behind the scenes in the industry who has done some independent films, and she told me that they're like on a 3-day, 72-hour lag behind people like me. You know what I'm saying? So it's been like, what, 8 days now, going on 9 days that these people have been striking. And it's leaking out. The information is leaking out from the mainstream that's on a regional or a local basis, like Alabama.com. They publish, you know, trying to minimize the work stoppage, where these victims of modern day slavery have said, we're not going to work. And so they just put everybody on lockdown, and they're saying that's the only prison that happened in that state. And that's okay. I don't, you know, again, I don't expect the masses of the victims that's in on these prison plantations to 100% just rise up. We haven't seen that in history, but it is, speaking of a 10%, there is, though, some who do set it off. You know what I'm saying? They bring about change by not being afraid to go against the grain. But, of course, you know, like these prisoners have been citing some very, I mean, they've been very academic in explaining the reason for pointing to the for their protests, the work stoppages, and saying this is slave wages. This is 13th Amendment slavery. And, you know, Ava DuVernay got the film coming out on October the 7th, called the 13th. You, of course, LaRon, being a part of the family here at Black Talk Radio Network, you know about New Abolitionist Radio. I think you have described yourself as an abolitionist, if I'm not mistaken.
You know what? That's something that I definitely aspired to be. I'm not quite there yet, but okay. I mean, it's definitely something that I'm really passionate about, and just, you know, learning about the system, you know, listening to your show, using terminology instead of, you know, prison, you know, just, you know, using it as 21st century slavery. I mean, just really kind of calling it for what it is. And so, you know, what I aim to do is to educate and to, you know, expose as much and as many people as possible to this. So yeah, I'm mm-hmm. you know, I'm out there, man.
Now, speaking of bringing some relief, you wrote a piece on California Proposition 57. Yeah. The title of it is Parole for Nonviolent Criminals and Juvenile Court Trial Requirements 2016. I have linked listeners and those who will download the podcast, come to blacktalkradionetwork.com to find the link, or just Google that. You're smart people. You can find it. But I have linked to it for those who are on the network right now. But Mr. Barton's piece was why I am voting yes on Prop 57. So, Mr. Barton, will you explain to the listeners, take as much time as you need, what do you think, why do you think this bill is constructive?
Well, as someone who is concerned about, you know, this ginormous prison plantation that's affectionately called the prison industrial complex, or the mass incarceration in the United States, specifically in California, what struck me about Prop 57 is that it allows nonviolent offenders to have more chances to get parole. It allows nonviolent offenders to accumulate good time and allow that to be put towards getting parole. It allows the system to look at their educational achievements. It allows the judge to have discretion to charge a juvenile as an adult versus the prosecutor. So, I mean, those are three really big things. I mean, just for the fact that there's so many people sitting in prison. I mean, I believe the last count was over 80% of people incarcerated are incarcerated due to drug offenses, and a lot of these offenses are nonviolent. You know, much of them are possession, and a bulk of them are possession of cannabis. So by just allowing people to just languish in prison, I mean, it really does no one any good except for people that profit from the prison industrial complex, you know, such as police officers, such as COs, and such as people that have been invest in private prisons. So what Prop 57 does is it allows people to get another chance quickly. I mean, if you have someone who has been in prison for quite some time off of a possession of a marijuana charge, that person has completed his or her bachelor's degree, they've got the master's degree, they've been a model prisoner, well, you should be able to reward that person by giving him or her a chance to be released. And so that's what Prop 57 does. You know, it gives people a chance to get out earlier and to be productive citizens. And most importantly, in the piece, what I wrote, Scotty, is that it gives these people a chance to reacclimate to the outside world, to be able to be reunited with their families. I mean, it just gives them a chance to just move on from their life, because prison should not be all about the punishment, right? Prison should be a situation where, you know, we're just not just going to punish you, but you can actually learn from your mistake, if it was a mistake, and just move on. I mean, let's get these people out of the system.
Now, as an abolitionist, I would say those people that you described that are in there on cannabis-related charges, the number one charge I would say, if California is anything like Colorado used to be before they legalized it totally, recreationally and medicinally, but it was manufacture, which is growing it, distribution, which is selling it maybe to your neighbor or whoever, and possession, like you said, just possessing it. That was the bulk of the charges. Since they legalized it, those charges dropped by 97% in Colorado courts.
That's incredible, right?
Right.
But one thing that I'm sorry, not to interrupt you, but one thing that I do want to let people know is, however, those charges may have those arrests and the charges may have dropped. However, arrests for black and brown people pertaining to cannabis, those arrests have in fact doubled.
Well, what they're doing is targeting those 21 and older. I've actually
right.
looked into it, because they can't target, that's impossible for it to happen to those who are legally able to do those things,
right.
You know, 21 and older. So from what I was reading from some of the police officials were saying, their strategy was then to target people 21 and under.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Well, you had mentioned Colorado's legalization of marijuana. I just want to let people know that California's Proposition 64 is for the legalization of cannabis. So for those that did not know that, it will be on the ballot. And I'm, you know, if I were a betting man, Mr. Reed, I would say that this will be passing with flying colors. So.
Say if you were a betting man. Well, I hope so. And as an abolitionist, I don't feel like it promotes justice for a group of people with power to tell other people what they can and cannot consume, especially
Absolutely.
When we're talking about plants that you can grow naturally that are indigenous to many places all over the planet. And quote-unquote mankind has used these substances for thousands of years, and so more and more, I would say the progressive view is when people do have problems with addiction, that you treat it as a health problem,
absolutely,
and not a criminal one. But the reason that they don't is because of what you mentioned earlier, and that's the profit motive. But as Colorado demonstrates, and California is much, much bigger, so I'm glad you mentioned Prop 64. California, Colorado has, from just the legalization and the taxes associated with the quote-unquote legal sales from the dispensaries and those with licenses, and obviously there are issues with racism being practiced in the issuing of those licenses, but
right.
But it has generated so much tax revenue that the schools are said to be now fully funded. It also reduces the cost of processing people in the courts. Remember the 97%, right. You know, arrest on those three different charges are down. Also I heard that taxpayers getting a rebate because they got so much surplus in taxes. Now imagine a state the size of California. Okay.
Right.
But taking it back to the prisoners that you mentioned, the only reason I went down the cannabis road is because this bill on Ballotpedia, and it's saying that these inmates who could be affected by this initiative are about 25,000 nonviolent state felons that could seek early release and parole under Proposition 57. And like you stated, some of them have degrees now. They have bachelor degrees. They are educated.
Man.
They're ready to step into a job. Their chances of finding employment should be much better than, let's just say, somebody coming out of high school or
right.
what have you. So it just makes no sense to have people in prison in the first place over cannabis, any of those charges that we related, and it just doesn't make any sense to continue slavery because as
right.
The
great thing about this this proposition, Scotty, is that again it really encourages people who are incarcerated to not only stay away from trouble. I mean, as much as you can being in an environment like that, but also encourages them to really, for lack of a better term, hit the books to educate themselves. And as you just said, people with a bachelor's or a master's, they have a better chance of getting out and gaining employment versus someone who's just coming home with no kind of skills. And also this ballot, it says that you just don't have to get a bachelor's degree. You don't have to get a master's degree. You can go and learn a trade. You can become a barber. You can become a furniture maker. I mean, just any type of education that you can get. It'll sort of move you towards getting parole. And
like accumulating
and
a point system, accumulating for accomplishing educational tasks or goals or skill that will help you in reentry and lower the chances of recidivism.
And that's what it is, Scotty. It's all about beating recidivism because as you know, it's a revolving door, right? I have to attribute this to the Clintons. One of the factors of the 1994 crime bill is that it also eliminated certain types of aid for prisoners and for inmates. So I mean, doing that set up this recidivistic system that people darn near couldn't help but to fall in. I mean, because they did not have any type of educational opportunities, but with Prop 57, it encourages you to do that. And also, again, going back to my original point, there's so many nonviolent people in prison. Why do we want to house nonviolent offenders, people who possibly could have been busted for possession of heroin, to be housing them with people who are bank robbers or people who are in for murder? It just makes no sense. And one thing about being in prison, from my talks with several ex-offenders is like, you can go in for 5 years, you know, committing a small-time crime, and then end up catching another case, and you're in there for another 30 because you just been caught up. You just got caught up doing something. So,
like,
I mean,
you may have killed another inmate to defend yourself, and you catch a case in there.
Absolutely, know. Man. I mean, so, you know, this is why this proposition is very, very, very important. And the unfortunate thing is that there's so much misinformation going on about this. Is that I know that I believe the site is called Breitbart.com. They publish stories about, oh, well, this is going to release violent inmates, you know, rapists, murders. Like, no, it's not. It's specifically in the language says,
right, in the title,
offenders.
Parole for nonviolent criminals and juvenile court trial requirements.
Exactly.
Which, Mr. Barton, I do want to take a station identification break and yep. open up the phone lines, give any listeners out there that have any questions, especially if you're in California or if you're in a state with a similar proposition. So two important proposition before voters in California, this Proposition 57 that we're discussing today with Mr. LaRon Barton. And the other one that he mentioned, I believe it was Prop 47?
Yes, sir. Prop 47, that was the proposition that Jerry Brown championed, which it just reduced many felonies to misdemeanors, which were also nonviolent felonies, you know. And Scotty, and as you know, many of them had to do with drug possession or drug use.
Right. So we want to give the listeners an opportunity to call in and ask Mr. Barton any questions, share any news, similar news that's happening in your state. And you can do that by calling us on the conference line. That is 1-641-715-3660. The participant code is 549-032-pound. Hit *6 and 1 to comment on air. The studio line is 704-951-5030. Again, that's 704-951-5030. Again, we're talking to author and activist Mr. LaRon Barton about Proposition 57 and Proposition 47 that's before voters in California in less than 60 days in November. So you're listening to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed. We'll be back on the other side. The Black Talk Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium. You are tuned in to Black Talk Radio, new black media for the new millennium.
The Black Talk Media Project funds the use of new media technology in efforts to restore independent black voices to the myriad of issues affecting Afro-descendant people all over the planet. If media can control the minds of the masses, as Malcolm X once said, then you must ask yourself, who is in control of the media targeting the masses of black people today? Help bring back independence, self-determination, and respect for black culture in the production of global media by joining the effort to crowdfund new black media for the new millennium. Visit blacktalkmediaproject.org for more information on how you can invest in public black radio for the masses.
And welcome back to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed. I'm broadcasting from behind what I call the enemy lines of USA Inc. We're talking about modern day slavery and human trafficking today. Again, shout out to those victims of prison slavery who are on strike, and protesting. And one of the articles that I read, the person who spoke to the media expressed that they're not just addressing the fact that they're being paid slave wages and they want at least minimum wage, but they were also addressing that school to prison pipeline that many of them perhaps was trapped in. And we've heard about many reports on that school to prison pipeline, and people have different names and terms like the prison industrial complex, but we're all talking about the same thing. And of course, I always call it modern day slavery and human trafficking as legalized by the 13th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. Again, we're speaking with Mr. LaRon Barton today about a couple of ballot initiatives in California coming up in November. Let's talk about, we haven't talked about the juvenile portion of this Prop 57, Mr. Barton. And I'm on Ballotpedia and it says, how would juvenile trials change? And I'm just going to read to you, sir, what it says. It says, instead of prosecutors, judges would decide whether to try juveniles as young as 14 years old in adult court. Prosecutors were given the right to directly file charges against juvenile offenders in adult court when voters approved Proposition 21 in 2000. So that was when George Bush was selected in year 2000 in his run against Mr. Gore. So let me read that again. Instead of prosecutors, judges would decide whether to try juveniles as young as 14 years old in adult court. So it's just, you know, and as a black person, you're reminded historically by victims like George Stinney of South Carolina, who was executed for the rape of two white girls that he had nothing to do with. And that was like, you know, just any black person to do. And he was executed by the state of South Carolina. I think they just recently pardoned him, but their pardon ain't going to bring him back. And it isn't going to punish killers. But this would, what are your thoughts on the changes of putting it in the hands of a judge as opposed to the prosecutor? I would just say cynically, Mr. Barton, it depends on the judge. So
I totally agree with you. It's one of those things where it's like, I mean, you know, being black in America, we realize that, you know, the judge and the prosecutor for the most part play on the both team, like play on the same team. But if you look at my essay, it says that since 2003, more than 10,000 California offenders under 18 have been tried as adults, and 7,200 of them have been tried as adults with no decision made by the judge. So
I have it right here. I actually had printed out your article and actually highlighted that, and it, you were quoting the San Jose Mercury News. And they reported the Human Rights Watch, so this is coming from Human Rights Watch, is saying that since 2003, more than 10,000 California offenders under 18 have been tried as adults, and 7,200 of them are directly filed in adult court with no oversight by a judge.
Right. So that essentially means that the judge did not have any kind of decision making ability in that. So I mean that's over 70% of young people under 18 being tried as adults. I mean if you look at it, man, I mean a young person aged say 10, 12, 13, 14, their brain hasn't even fully developed yet to fully even understand many of the decisions that they have made. I mean, their cognitive ability is not at the level of an adult. I mean, don't believe me. Research this from any credible biology or medical book. I mean, we're essentially trying people that have an emotional that have the emotional as well as intellect of teenagers. We're trying them as adults. I mean, again, we need to move away from this punitive aspect of the prison. I mean, we should be all about trying cases individually instead of blanket, you know, this person, this 14-year-old committed murder, so we need to try him as an adult. Like, that does not get us anywhere, because I mean, this person's life is completely lost. So by giving the discretion to the judge, we're saying that okay, we're pretty much hedging our bets that this number of 7,200 people will decrease. I mean, that's what we're hoping. I mean, of course, there's no I did not find any concrete evidence of that, Scotty. And as you know, the judicial system has never been friendly to African Americans. But from the most part, it just seems as if prosecutors want to just prosecute the person.
Seem like they want to pad their records. And not to interrupt you, but I just had a thought, and I don't know how things are done in the different jurisdictions of state court in California. But I was wondering if there's a difference. Between how they count their convictions. What if it's in juvenile court? Because a lot of stuff in juvenile court is adjudicated. We don't really hear about people running on their juvenile conviction record, you know, even though they represent the state. And so I don't know when these prosecutors, when they be running, you know, campaigns where they're voted for, they cite their conviction rates, and I wonder if trying more children as adults pass their records somehow, their conviction records, and it makes them look tough on crime, like Donald Trump's talking about the
right
people he likes.
Well, I mean, it's one of those things, like it's kind of like the death penalty. I mean, trying children as adults hasn't decreased violent crime. I mean, it hasn't decreased nonviolent crimes. I mean, it's one of those things that trying juveniles as adults, it is meant to assure, and just to be honest with you, white people that there is something being done about crime, and that these young, dark people will not come busting into your house. But again, there has never been any correlation between charging juveniles as adults and violent crime amongst juveniles decreasing. It doesn't work that way. That's just straight propaganda, and if you believe that, then you need to seriously look up the numbers for yourself. So that's another reason why Prop 57 is so important. We need to treat juveniles as juveniles. There's no reason why a 14-year-old child or even a 16-year-old child should be charged like a 30-year-old person. I mean, doesn't that just seem logical?
Yeah, it seems logical, but that's logical if your aim is justice. If your aim is slavery, well, the average age of the African that was kidnapped from Africa, those who were kidnapped from Africa, because they will snatch you no matter where you were on the planet, okay? But the average age of the victim of the transatlantic victim trade,
right,
were 16, 14 to 16 was the age range. So, you know, they've long been targeting children. And so I always try to take the long view and connect it. And I just really believe that this is what courts have become, are basically ships where, you know, they process people and bring them somewhere and put them on a plantation somewhere. That's just part of the process. And children have always been the target. So, I mean, it's just so all ridiculous. But again, it's illogical unless there's a profit motive. Because like in New York, for example, you can make almost $500,000 as a private prison enslaver or some contractor. You know, that industry generating almost $500,000 for one juvenile. That's how much Khalif Browder was worth and why they held him for 2 years with no charges. So that's about $1 million they made just off of his incarceration. And unfortunately, we know he killed himself after he, you know, suffered all kind of brutality. Absolutely. Behind the bars.
Yeah. I mean, I think that Prop 57 would actually would help to not have Khalif Browder. I mean, Khalif Browder, I mean, he was in Rikers Island for how long? For stealing a backpack.
About 2 years. And he was innocent. He was innocent. They didn't have anything to charge him. So, but yeah, that's what he was accused of by slave catchers who saw him walking down the street. I think he was coming home from school.
You know, like, and that just illustrates another point that I want to make. People who have not been, you know, I've been in jail, you know, like more times than not, take it personal. And you know, the short stints that I've done in jail obviously can't compare to people who have done years and years. We don't look at the mental and the emotional terror and just the deterioration of the mind that people experience when they're inside.
Especially a child whose brain hasn't fully developed. I think you mentioned biology until 26 years old is what the science says.
Yeah, so if this young juvenile commits a mistake and is probably not thinking past, you know, tomorrow or the next day, we're gonna imprison that person for 25 to 30 years. I mean, the person's life is done, all because we have an overzealous prosecutor who may be getting pressure from the public. Maybe that prosecutor has political ambitions, or, you know, could be the prosecutor's racist, or could be that the prosecutor takes his or her job that much serious. But
or profits from slavery.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I'm sorry, people be asking for presidents to release their tax records, but I don't think I've ever heard that question put to prosecutors. What if they they don't have to take money under the table as those two judges were in Pennsylvania? They could just invest in certain stock that has contracts. So I don't know if there's full disclosure there anywhere in this country. But one thing before I want to bring up on the juvenile tip is that you're exactly right. These are children, and it has this impact on them like that. And we don't even consider society is not even taking responsibility for the outcome. Now, they want to, when it sounds good in a slogan, talk about we're all in or it takes a village. Well, any wrong paths that juveniles are on, speaking from experience as a juvenile, was usually an adult or a teenager much, much older than me who influenced me to do those things that I should not have done, okay? And but I didn't ever do anything, obviously didn't get caught or do anything that I would consider a crime, period, because I wasn't harming nobody else. But any bad, quote-unquote, bad influence, you know, when I was in Detroit, they had a gang called Young Boys Incorporated. Why was it called Young Boys Incorporated? So that, because adults were using the young boys who would only end up in juvenile court when they get caught with drugs and distribution and possession, and they would back then, you might get 2 years in juvie hall, or they had, you know, those little homes like that in Detroit at that time. But now they just send them straight to prison. So I'm saying, where is society's role? And then in your pop music, endorsed by corporations, all the major Fortune 500 corporations, many of them are using prison slave labor. But they also endorse music on stations targeting these young people that is doing what, Mr. Barton? Is it not promoting crime on a lot of these stations?
Well, I mean, so, you know, you and I, we talked about that before, Scotty. Like, you know, I would be remiss to say that the music and that the media does not play some form, like, does not have some form of responsibility as
no, it's not the main cause. It's not, I grant you, but it's a variable in the recipe for some of these outcomes. And it's
definitely a variable.
And it just doesn't look right to me for gangsta rap to be sponsored by McDonald's.
Well, I mean, okay, so, you know, we're going to talk about gangster rap. So we should not even be talking about the arts as much as we should be talking about the economic structure that is not there for young Black and Latino as well as poor white people. I mean, the reason why I'll wager you, right? The reason why that most of these young kids are out here committing crimes, they're referred to as lifestyle crimes, right? And people are just really just trying to survive, man. I mean,
that's what I call them, crimes of survival.
So now, you know, I remember, and I'm writing this this essay now on why I don't think we should punish, on why I don't blame people for selling drugs. And on your show, you said, you know, I don't blame people for selling drugs because I don't have a job to give them. I thought that was really, really impactful. Now, most of these people are just out here trying to survive, man. I mean, dude, because like the mom is working, the father could be there, he could not be there, he could be possibly in prison thanks to Bill and Hillary's 1994 crime bill, or you know. Both parents could be working wild and crazy hours. So what does that do? That leaves the child to be sort of this latchkey kid that's raised by Snoop Dogg
and niggas with attitudes and.
but at the same time, they're like, all right, so like you're naming NWA, you're naming Snoop Dogg, but at the end of the day, Scotty, we need to circle back to what created NWA, what created Snoop Dogg.
But that's all I'm saying though. So don't take me the wrong way. I am not for censorship, but I don't think that FCC license stations where the rules and regulations say no profane or obscene material from the hours. There's never supposed to be any obscene material, but you can't have any profane material for the hours of 6 a.m. to 10 o'clock p.m. So if I'm this child's attorney and I'm representing one, I'm naming all of these factors. Now, we have failed as a society to protect this child from these bad influences. Not only was he influenced by the 22-year-old who enticed him with wads of cash and told him he can be like his favorite gangster rapper that's really just a actor portraying an image,
right?
and on television. And so we need to all take responsibility, Your Honor, and this is a child. So if we're going to hold him accountable for his behavior, don't we have to hold ourselves accountable for the environment that we allow?
Well, I think that the onus and the blame should be primarily placed on the parents and or the guardian. I mean, you know, because at the end of the day, you know, that is your child. Now, you can't watch your child 24/7. And as I said before, if you're working trying to provide for your child, there's going to be times that your child's going to be left alone. But I mean, I don't know, man. I mean, blaming the music. I mean, I will say that when I was coming up, a lot of the rappers they had more positive messages. I mean, I listened to Rakim, I listened to KRS-One, I listened to Kane.
So how come? Well, there are no more artists like that. There are no alternatives, or is it by design?
I definitely feel like it's by design. About a couple years ago, Too Short said that, you know, Jive would not promote a lot of his positive music. I mean, a lot of people don't know, but dude, Too Short's one of the great conscious rappers. I mean, if you listen to his album Life Is Too Short, if you listen to Short the Funky, there was a lot of like songs talking about the neighborhood, talking about the ghetto. I mean, you know,
I'm an old head, you know that, Mr. Barton. I'm 50, right. So I was around with the birth of hip hop, but I don't want us to get sidetracked on that issue. But I would just ask you to go to blacktalkradionetwork.com and do just put in a search engine Clear the Airways Project and listen to some of them brothers, because all we talking about is what they tell us are community airways and community stations, and they're supposed to obey the rules. So obey the rules. What's the problem with, if you got to play profane stuff, why you can't play it after 10 o'clock p.m. all the way?
Right.
You know, when you clubbing during the night, when you out at the club all in, when the vulnerable minds are asleep because they got school the next day. You know what I'm saying? So, but we getting it 24/7, and that's a problem if we just want to go to. So it's taking ownership. We got to counter, I feel, every weapon that's used against us, we got to come up with a counter for it. But I want to get sidetracked on that.
I totally get it. You know, that's why, you know, for every, and not to dip into, you know, anti-blackness or to name call, but for every program like Don Lemon, we have a program such as yours. You know, for every Larry Elder, we have the cows. So I mean, yeah, I totally agree.
But not on those stations reaching millions, though. We're reaching hundreds of thousands, and we may over a course of a year reach a million. But, you know, we don't have the influence, and that's getting into why Black Talk Media Project has a project that we're attempting to fund in order to build our own network to combat that.
Right.
But we don't have that reach. Again, Bill and Hillary did us in with the 1996 Telecommunications Act.
Absolutely.
With help from all the Democrats, regardless of their color. So getting back to this, did you have any final thoughts on California Proposition 57? In my opinion, any relief that is going to be brought to especially a person who has not committed a crime against another human being. If what you say is true, the majority of these are for cannabis possession, distribution, or manufacturing. It makes no sense to keep these people locked up behind bars when they have degrees. They can come out and possibly become taxpayers if you want to take the system view. But to continue to hold these people in prison is to continue to maintain the system of slavery.
Right.
So obviously I endorse Prop 57. That's my endorsement as an abolitionist.
Absolutely. You know, Scotty, I think that anyone who is or who has been affected by the prison industrial complex, meaning that if you've been locked up, if you have loved ones who have been in prison. I got a message from a woman on Sunday. You know, she wrote me, she said, "Hey, I just wanted to say thank you for writing this. You know, my young son, he's been in solitary, and I feel that, you know, what you're saying has a good message, and that people need to know about this." So I mean, that's the reason why that I write articles such as this. And I just feel like that people should know by now that the prison industrial complex is, there's nothing positive about it. I mean, there's no redeeming quality. All it is that to quote Edward Bunker, it's an animal factory. So it makes you worse, you know, than what you came in. So with Prop 57, it allows people to get out quicker. You know, it allows people who have shown shown that they've been a model inmate, that they have strived for education, that shown that they have been trying to better themselves. It gives them a chance to get parole easier. It gives you it gives the discretion for charging a juvenile as an adult back to the judge. I mean, 7,200 out of 10,000 juveniles since 2003 have been charged as an adult. At some point, we have to look at the system and say something's wrong here. And most importantly, Prop 57 allows people who have been charged with nonviolent crimes, gives them a parole date easier. If someone's selling weed, man, someone possessing crack, I mean, they should not be locked up for eons. I mean, they're sick, and those are lifestyle crimes. I mean, you know, to quote my book Straight Dope, you don't put sick people in prison, do you? And many drug addicts are sick. You don't put people in prison who are hustling drugs to try to feed their family in prison, do you? No. You give them a job. You help them out. And so that's what I think Prop 57 will go a long way to correct the rights and wrong. I'm sorry, to correct the wrongs that the prison industrial complex has wrought on our community.
Well, I want to thank you again for your work as a journalist called Black Journalists Matter.
Absolutely.
And we won't rehash the complaints that I lodged earlier about the lack of coverage of the national prison strikes, but just wanted to let you know that what you do is important. So thank you for updating us on this activity in people activity area. What is this, number 6 in California? So for those who participate in that area, again, I can't say enough that it would bring some relief to some people that I feel have been treated unjustly, should not have been there in the first place, and the main reason for them being there is a profit motive. So thank you again, Mr. Barton, and you be safe behind these enemy lines of USA Inc.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much, Scotty Reed, and thank you, everyone, for listening. Look forward to hearing from you soon, man.
All right.
Thank you.
Okay, that was Mr. Barton, Mr. LaRon Barton, an activist, former victim of modern-day slavery. I don't think I ever knew that about Mr. Barton. But like he said, he hadn't been in there years like other people, so good to see that he hasn't forgotten what happened to him, and he wants to bring relief to others. That's abolitionist work, but he, again, is still trying to grapple with that term, and if he wants to adopt that term to describe his activity. But that's abolitionist work. Whenever you bring freedom to enslaved victims of slavery, yes, that's abolitionist work. For whatever reason, I still view it as abolitionist work. So I'm going to take a station identification break, hit some message music from Sincere Naquiri. When I come back, let's take a look at the latest reports on the national prison strikes that you heard me mentioning during our interview and discussion with Mr. Barton. Again, it continues to be ignored for the most part by mainstream media and independent media alike. The strikes by victims of America's continued use of slave labor seek to address slave wages. Corporations, states, and the U.S. government pays prisoners, often nonviolent so-called drug offenders, but participants have stated they wish to see an end to the school-to-prison pipeline that exists in this country. Other news, again, latest police snuff film that is getting a whole lot of publicity on the corporate news channels is Terrence Crutcher. I hope I'm pronouncing his name correctly, where initial reports from police were determined to be a lie. The video determined that they lied. So we're talking about, you know, killing, lies, and videotape. That's what we're talking about. Murder, lies, and videotape. So we got this officer caught on film killing Mr. Terrence Crutcher, who was a black motorist, and they're trying to justify the murder by claiming she thought, in quotations, put that in air quotes, she thought 40-year-old Terrence Crutcher was on drugs. So if you haven't seen the video, I haven't seen the video, but I've seen transcriptions of it and stills from the video, and I'm looking at that. I use that for the page to discuss it today, from the view from the helicopter that they called out on one unarmed black man who broke down on a highway. So here come these highway robbers and murderers, and you could see Mr. Crutcher standing right in, I would say, 4 feet within the police car with his hands up, and from reports, it wasn't long, and he was shot center mass. So I don't know what kind of training that this woman just got in determining who's on drugs or how you should handle people on drugs, but apparently if she was acting by the book, so to speak, by how she was trained, then they're training people to gun down people on drugs. Not saying that Mr. Crutcher was on any drugs. There's no indication that they found any drugs on him. None of that. None. So, but even if he was, this is saying it's open season on people we suspect of being on PCP. We suspect of being on cannabis. We suspect of, well, yeah, they do kill people who drink alcohol. So it's like open season. Like, that's her defense. I thought he was on drugs, and we know drug addicts are so dangerous. And then you rely into, you know, the programming that the masses have gotten since the Reagan. We had to go back to Nixon, but Nancy Reagan is most known for her Just Say No campaign and demonizing people who use, again, something that people have been using for tens of thousands of years. Indigenous people, through science, discover medicinal properties of plants, and they go through a process, and they create something that is beneficial to that person. And then we got other people who want to criminalize these things or profit off of them by patenting stuff that they didn't invent, at like they came up with it, make billions of dollars off of it. The pharmaceutical company then sells it, doctors prescribe it. But if you get, you know, you grow something to help your pain and your arthritis or your glaucoma, we putting you into slavery for that. So that's what it's all about. That's what it's all about. This was, if we want to accept that narrative from them, this was a drug war killing. Chalk up another casualty to the drug war, which I've even heard retired law enforcement officers from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition say that this puts officers' lives in danger. So it ain't anything that the civilians or quote-unquote citizens are doing. He just had his hands up, and we've heard the racist suspects mock the young people who had the sign saying hands up, don't shoot. We just in Florida saw the employed. He was employed, a healthcare, mental health care worker, out there trying to save the life of his client in Florida, laying on the ground, identifying himself, begging the man suffering from autism to lay down, and he said, I got my hands up, and the cop shot him. So here, I mean, how many videos do we need to see? So we're going to take it's all related to slavery. They maintaining slavery. In order to maintain slavery, you have to give privileges and passes to slave catchers in doing the course of their duties. You reward them. You as we know, Panatella, the man who choked out Eric Garner on the pavement, has been sitting behind the desk and getting pay raises by the tune of thousands of dollars or more annually in his check. So we're going to take a station identification break. You're listening to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed. I broadcast this program every Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday. I take Wednesday afternoons off because I'm on the air with my abolitionist comrades, Max Parthas, Johanna, and Elijah, every Wednesday night at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time. Again, coming up later at 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time on this Tuesday, which is September the 20th, Tando Radio Show will be on air talking about, I think you're going to do the 96-hour margin call. Also talk about some of the international war moves that's being made, some of the things being stated by the powers that be out there. And as Dave has consistently reported, you know, it could be war. World War III has already started. It really has. But we know that there are others who want to escalate this. So I talked more about that yesterday. So keep it locked right here on Black Talk Radio. I'm actually trying to pull up some Sincere Nkwari. Check him out at sincerenkwari.com if you're looking for some of those fabulous beats for your project, whether it's film, audio, whatever project you need. So just check him out. Again, that is Sincere Nkwari, God Life Beats, but his website is sincerenkwari.com.
Sincere Nkwari.
Jails in America are being privatized, and they are on the stock exchange, and you don't build a hotel unless you expect occupancy. So when they're building prisons, they want to build them, but they're building them for you.
I look around this room, and I see nothing but untapped potential. You have potential. You have... Oh, boy.
But now they've got to create a culture in the community that lends to violence, crime, drugs, guns, prostitution, and it's a steady pipeline to prison. Atlantic Records. See, these are the real safeties. They have to be exposed, brothers. You rap, and in your rap, there's a beef with another rapper. And you get real, you know, fiery about it. And you're talking about drilling down.
Around this room, and I see nothing but untapped potential. You have potential. You have.
You want to kill your brother. So that's the kind of rap you're doing. And then the radio stations are complicit. Because if you make something clean, they don't want to play it. So when you come to the record executives with something clean, but it's got a good beat, hey, that's nice, but see, if you keeping it real. And keeping it real means
keeping it as it is so that it will never change.
Radio since 2008, providing new black media for the masses. And welcome back to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed. Taking a look at what's in the Google News feed, just typed in prison strike, and there is, as I have been reporting, some leaks that come out here and there. Whether we call it corporate media, you know, they have their localized operations, and so it leaks out that way because a lot of people, they can't keep it quiet because you got people outside protesting, you got guards that work there that live in some of these communities, they tell their families, so it's hard to, you know. And then we ask the media, that is, ask the question, well, why have you locked down the entire prison? And in one prison, I don't recall the state right now, they were saying they were flooding the cell blocks. The prisoners were flooding the cell blocks because they had been put on lockdown going on 2 days, something like that, two days, and were just being denied their human rights, whether they were participating in the work stoppage or not. So again, the system keeps chugging along, and I'm talking about the system of slavery, because we participate. And those people who are on these plantations, it is no different than if they were on the plantation in the 1800s, the 1700s, the 1600s. Labor is coerced. In fact, it is forced. They will torture you. And the international community has long determined that isolation, solitary confinement, even for just a matter of 24 hours, is inflicting emotional and mental permanent damage on that individual, that human being. So just taking a look at the news lines to see who's saying what, and or the news feeds to see who's saying what. I check the all section of Google when I do searches to see if any of the blogs and underground independent. So I'm there first, but you'll also find some of the local media that should be considered corporate media. But AL.com, this is a report where they're saying that they're minimizing that. And before I do go further, let me again give out the telephone numbers if anybody has any thoughts, observations, solutions to share. You can give us a call at 641-715-3660. The participant code is 549-032 pound. Hit *6 and 1 to comment on air. The studio line, the 7-digit number, which is 704-951-5030. You can also make international free calls using the Call the Show widget that is posted on the broadcast page for Black Talk Radio News. So going back to scanning the headlines, so this report is coming to you from AL, which stands for Alabama, obviously. AL.com, state says Alabama prison strike impacted just one prison for 24 hours. So again, it is hard to gather news because we're talking about maximum security plantations. So sometimes it is hard to get news out about what's going on the prison plantation. State officials say an attempt by prison reform and inmate advocacy groups to launch a nationwide prison strike only resulted in a brief work stoppage at one Alabama prison, though it had greater success elsewhere in the country. The 24-hour strike, September the 9th, and again, this strike is ongoing. It is the 20th. It started on the 9th. Some of the reports that I'm seeing on social media is that you still have prisoners across the nation who are still resisting slavery. So, but I don't know why they calling it a 24-hour strike. You know, you have to be careful with the words that other people use because they would suggest that it was only set for 24 hours. So, but let me continue on. The 24-hour strike September the 9th at William C. Holman Correctional Facility in Atmore was one of a number of coordinated stoppages across the U.S. that day, described by advocates and inmates as an act of civil disobedience. The Holman action was precipitated by a number of previous strikes, including simultaneous stoppages at in May at Holman and Elmore Correctional Facilities in Elmore County, Alabama, and at one point at Springville St. Clair Correctional Facility in 2014. Warden Carter Davenport, who I believe is a proxy, and a guard were stabbed during a march of a prison slavery rebellion. Those are my words because I'm not going to use theirs. The September the 9th protest began at 12 a.m. that day and ended 24 hours later at 12 a.m. September the 10th. Other concurrent protests in other states lasted longer, with inmates in 20 prisons in 11 states striking and some protests through at least September the 16th, according to The Intercept. I didn't give a shout out to The Intercept. Democracy Now, I think I also mentioned, but there are other well-known platforms who have been missing in action. These black journalists, independent or part of the National Association of Black Journalists, have been nowhere to be heard from on this historic prison slavery rebellion. So that's from AL, and some of these websites, I tell you, it is trying to lock up my computer. But I would also just check the hashtag. You can use Facebook, you can use Twitter, prison strike, and you will get some of the updates from people on in the grassroots. And I have shared some of the videos in previous broadcasts here on Black Talk Radio News. Just having some computer issues right now. I'm just waiting on my browser to free up so I can close AL.com. I don't even doubt some sabotage going on, perhaps some script meant to lock it up so that you couldn't continue to read this information on what's going on in Alabama. I will continue to read until I can regain control of this browser. The September the 9th Holman strike was carried out by about 30 workers in the prison's kitchen. There are approximately 30 inmates. 10 per meal shift did not prepare the meals for the day, and in its tag plant where they're making license plates, which saw 35 inmates refuse to make license plates that day, according to Bob Horton, a spokesman for the Alabama Department of Slavery. So they call them corrections, but it's not about corrections. As you know, going back to California in our interview with Mr. Barton, yes, I want to kill this unresponsive page. You got people in there who have gotten master degrees and in there being held on nonviolent, often drug charges. So it's not about correcting any kind of behavior. It's not about being productive. It's not about being given a second chance. It's about profit. And that's what slavery has always been about, is profit. So all of these things are related and connected. Again, you're listening to Black Talk Radio News. Let me see if I can get back to the Google News feed. Mother Jones published, I think was a good piece, Why Prisoners Across the United States Have Gone on Strike. I think this is the second piece I've seen from them. I think they published one about a week ago or so. Truth Out, very good article. These are would be considered your alternative media. But Mother Jones, again, that article was one day ago. We're Freedom Fighters, the story of the nationwide prison labor strike. Truth Out, again, that was a very good article. I'm going to see if I can open it up without any problems. Hopefully they won't have any scripts or anything that would cause this browser to lock up, but I do want to share some of the information or some of the words of the prisoners themselves and why they are doing what they are doing, because the what we have always said, especially on New Abolitionist Radio, which we have talked about these strikes with prisoners, and I'm not going to name any names because I know the slave catchers are listening. They'll try to use it to charge somebody with some crimes and what have you, but these strikes have been going on a very long time, and so we are very familiar with this language, because we're almost positive this language was given birth on this network. So the First National truth-out.org published the article, We're Freedom Fighters, that's in quotes, the story of the nationwide prison strike. The first national prison labor strike in U.S. history launched on September the 9th, billed as a call to action against slavery in America. The spark for the action came from the Free Alabama Movement, a prison-based organization that has been mobilizing across the state since 2012. Alabama has been one of the most overcrowded prison systems in the country. Again, Free Alabama Movement, they had got out some videos on YouTube. We were spreading it on social media, showing mold, dangerous mold, and other just unlivable conditions that causes health problems for prisoners, which again then causes more costs to taxpayers, and it just goes on and on. This is slavery. That's all it is. Alabama has one of the most overcrowded prison systems in the country. Reports from FAMS based within home and prison indicated a universal refusal. So see, we're getting a totally different report from truth-out.org than what we're getting from corporateal.com, which I felt that article sought to minimize the participation or the impact of what was going on at Holman. So reports from fans based within home and prison indicated a universal refusal of the population to go to work on September the 9th. Pastor Kenneth Glasgow, the chief outside spokesperson for FAM, and indeed clergy, has always had a prominent role in the abolitionist movement. So this is a pastor speaking the truth out on the day of the launch, said significant strike action also took place within prisons in South Carolina, Virginia, and Ohio. These men have gone beyond religious barriers and race barriers, and most of all, incarceration barriers, Glasgow told Truth Out. By Wednesday evening, the Incarcerated Workers Organizing Committee estimated that 15,310 people in prisons were on lockdown in facilities where organizing or strikes had been confirmed. Several actions related to the strike have gained considerable attention the night before the national action. Some 400 men in Florida's Holmes Prison staged a rebellion that lasted most of Thursday night. By Monday, collective resistance had spread to 5 Florida prisons, including civil disobedience by 40 men in Columbia Correctional Institution in Lake City, and a 2-day work stoppage at nearby Mayo in northern Michigan's Ken Ross Correctional Facility. The men took a more low-key approach with about 400 incarcerated enslaved individuals staging a demonstration inside the gates. Immediately after the action, 150 of them were put on buses and sent to other institutions. And so we know from history that often when you had victims of slavery being brought over through the transatlantic slave trade, they were set to separate the unruly victims from the more docile ones, the ones who perhaps were just afraid and overcome by that fear and were just trying to survive, whereas you had these other people who would fight to the death for their freedom. So you had to separate them. So we see this going on here in 2016, where you separate the unruly victims of slavery from the general population, and that was pretty drastic to send hundreds of men to other plantations throughout the state. Wow. The legacy of slavery. The linkage between a strike action and slavery largely grew out of the extreme labor conditions inside Alabama prisons. In these facilities, many people worked in license plate factories and on plantation-like farms for a few cents a day, or in some cases, no remuneration at all. The exploitation of prison labor in the state has accentuated since the state legislature passed a law in 2012 to permit private contractors to employ people behind bars. So, again, think about that. Here we got private contractors who can get out of having to participate in Obamacare or pay a minimum wage or a livable wage, don't have to deal with no unions, but that's changing because the victims of slavery today are unionizing. But these are private corporations profiting from captive labor, and they wouldn't give you a job so that you can, you law-abiding citizen doing everything right in the right way, and you stand up at all the sporting events and pledge allegiance to a flag and what have you, and I don't know how you was able to afford the tickets being unemployed and what have you, but you know, are you giving these things thoughts as to slavery impacts not only those on the plantation but those outside of it as well? And through my intensive study of slavery in this country, and particularly the county that I'm sitting in, because it was only like six or seven wealthy county families that owned, that were enslaving people in this county, and the rest were just what they would call white farmers trying to eke out a living and what have you. Very few of them were employed by these wealthy people, who are the ones who started the Civil War and through propaganda was able to convince these poor dirt farmers to enlist for the cause of slavery and to die for that. So, I mean, the history, it just repeat, it keeps repeating itself. So, although most people who are white today could say, I'm not enslaving anyone, but in fact you are. Some of you may not even know it because you have no say in how your taxes are directed, but then some of a very small percentage are actively investing in slavery. It's traded on the stock market every day that it's open, going back to its roots. Again, the history is just, it keeps repeating. There's no denying it. So I don't want to stay trapped in this history vortex, so I'm going to move on. I'm looking for some quotes from some of the people, but it's a very, very long article, and I don't want to run out of time. I'm all overdue for my break. Let me jump down to the conclusion. Lastly, the strike has further momentum to reconstruct, Lastly, the strike has added further momentum to reconstruct or replace the 13th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. This amendment bans slavery and involuntary servitude except as a punishment for crime where other parties shall have been duly convicted, effectively permitting the enslavement of those who have been convicted of a crime. The spirit of this amendment flies in the face of increasing pressure for all rights of citizenship and equality for all those convicted of a crime or with a record of incarceration. As Pastor Glasgow put it, as long as it sits in our Constitution, along with it sits slavery in our Constitution. The 13th Amendment needs to be reconstructed. Attention to the 13th Amendment's legalization of slavery for people who have been convicted of crimes is likely to further heighten later this month when Ava DuVernay's Netflix film, The 13th, launches at the New York Film Festival. So we are indeed, I feel, at a crossroads or a point in history of this country and in the continued enslavement of people. I don't have anything further on that, but check the social media, hashtag prison strikes. Make sure that you share the stories and let people know, because again, no mainstream coverage, virtually none. I'm just going to go straight down. Mother Jones, again, that's another article from Mother Jones. I'm seeing Mother Jones. Alternet.org did an article 4 days ago, The Intercept. Also, The Alternet was 4 days ago. Raw Story did an article. The Nation, The Daily Mail, Wired.com, Democracy Now!, Vice.com. See, we're not seeing any ABC, MSNBC, CBS, none of the corporate networks. Except for what's overseas. Daily Mail I would consider corporate. Then we get to the blogs, Prisoner Hunger Strike, Solidarity, MassMagazine.com did a piece on it. I already mentioned AL.com, so again, I'm not seeing. So I'm going to click on news. Mother Jones again, AL, because news is where you get the corporate. That's like a corporate stream. But again, Fair Magazine, Wall Street Journal published something, Alternet, Wired, again, the same ones that I had been naming before. I-95.5 FM did something on it. So The Intercept, The Guardian, Jurist, UPI.com, The Nation again, The Real News Network, which I mentioned them earlier, The Electronic Antifada blog, The Palestinians is mentioning it. So did y'all hear any News One, Roland Martin, Boyce Watkins, Your Black World, BreakingBrown.com? I mean, just a number of black independent media and corporate media. It makes absolutely no sense. It is just an embarrassment, because when we look at history, the role that independent black media publisher, most of the abolitionist publishers were black. Frederick Douglass wasn't just a great speaker. He was a great writer and a publisher of a newspaper. He worked with other black people who were abolitionists, and sometimes he worked with white abolitionists in joint collaborations on abolitionist newspapers. So for the largest prison rebellion in the history of the United States, quite possibly, that we can document, happens in 2016, and black journalism is nowhere to be found. Wow. Just sad commentary. Those are my thoughts on that. That's why black journalism is, it matters, man. It matters. We look at, I want to then close out by talking about this officer, Miss, what's her name? Slave catcher, Betty, what is her last name? Betty Shelby of the Tulsa police, who said this victim of hers looked like he was on drugs. And that was her excuse she is going to use to justify the murder of Terrence Crutcher. a 40-year-old black man whose van had broken down. So I'm going to pull up the NewYorkDailyNews.com. The Tulsa police officer who fatally shot Terrence Crutcher after his car broke down in the middle of the street thought the unarmed man was behaving erratically and thought he may have been under the influence of PCP, the cop's attorney said. Officer Betty Shelby, who was seen on police video firing a single fatal shot at close range at Crutcher, had recently undergone drug recognition training. Now, what kind of training is that? Give me just a moment as they got off. As I try to mute this video.
Differences. The duo had been.
That's trying to come on video of the moment. Excuse me. Let me back up. Officer Betty Shelby, who was seen on the police video firing a single fatal shot at close range at Crutcher, had recently undergone drug recognition training and believed Crutcher was high on a dissociative sedative. Attorney Scott Wood told the Tulsa World. So again, did this training say that when you see people that you suspect are on PCP, to shoot them in the chest, to shoot center mass? Is that what is this training? Video of the moments leading up to the shooting, however, shows Crutcher 40 walking slowly towards his SUV with his hands high in the air in apparent compliance with the officer. The video shows that he was not belligerent, attorney DeMario Solomon Simmons said, who is representing the Crutcher family, told the Daily News. The video shows what the video shows. That's the great thing about video. It has no biases, he said. A police source told Tulsa World that investigators found a vial of PCP somewhere in Crutcher's car, but did not determine whether he was under the influence of the drug at the time of the shooting. So how do we know that she didn't take that from the class she was possibly taking, or taking it from the evidence locker, as often we get news reports from drugpolicy.org with the weekly corrupt cop stories? How do we know? And she didn't just throw it in the back seat, you know, while Dave Chappelle made a joke about it, but it was just raising a social issue, you know, where they shoot the dead black shoot the black person and then sprinkle some crack on them. So how we know where this vial of PCP come from? But again, even if and we saw the video of the steal. I didn't see it. I saw steals from it because I just don't want to watch it. It makes me angry. I'm trying to watch my level of anger so that it doesn't lead to any long-term health problems. But I seen the steals, and I didn't see his vehicle in the steal that I saw. He was like 3 feet, maybe 3 yards in front of the slave catcher's vehicle, and she was about 10, maybe 8 yards, 10 yards. And he's standing there in front of the vehicle with his hands up. Might have been walking towards it to put his hands on the hood of the car, and she shot him. And she shot and killed him. And then did not render any aid, from what I have read, that they just stood around and let him bleed out, as they often did back in, you know, slave catchers would do that. They might get chewed out or something and might be fined or forced to pay for the value of the enslaved victim. Now it's just a perk of the slave catching job. Let them let off some steam and take their racist transgressions out. Anytime I see these, and it's involving white cops, especially in predominantly white states, they have histories of anti-blackness and white terrorism against black people and non-white people. When I see these acts, I think of the 2006 FBI report about white supremacist infiltration of law enforcement. Just Google that. I never hear this report from the FBI, this warning, if you will, about the infiltration of terrorists in the police departments being brought up on any of the platforms like CNN, MSNBC. None of the contributors, none of the pundits, none of the host, none of these questions are being brought up. They're not asking, are these rash of killings, especially of unarmed black men, in fact, evidence of what the FBI warned about in 2006 of ghost skins, white supremacists who don't get tattoos so as not to tip anyone off to their allegiances and able to practice racism institutionally under the color of the law. FBI put this report out, even named some people we've probably been seeing on TV, but they redacted the names. People that you will see on Fox News, CNN. Usually they sound, you know, the ones that are the most racist and always arguing for law and order and what have you. I suspect it's those people who have retired from federal law enforcement, what have you. The report even mentioned prosecutors. These might possibly be ghost skins. And again, I have to still remind you that they just completely ignored the white supremacist tattoos that was on the white Dallas police officer that was killed by the U.S. Army veteran as a protest against police violence and brutality. Think that was Sergeant Micah X. I don't recall his last name right now, but Micah X, Sergeant Micah X, his violent protests. That one was confirmed. These were confirmed tattoos of white supremacists, and they just swept it under the rug. Nobody wants to talk about it. Let's just ignore it. Let's just ignore it. And if you bring it up, we're going to get all hostile. We're going to threaten you. We're going to call you all kind of racial slurs. And we just don't talk about these things because we have to put forth this front like we the shining city on the hill. We got to put forth this front to everybody else in the world that we are the number one respecter of people's human rights. We abolished slavery a long time ago. And anything that you do to show people otherwise, then you're a threat. So condolences to the Crutcher family. We'll see how long it take for them to indict or not indict this officer. And of course, I must mention also the helicopter pilot who was heard saying that he looks like a bad dude might be on something. So they're profiling this person, profiling him. They were all set to make a drug slave of Mr. Crutcher. For whatever reason, I don't know. Other than just hate in her heart, just murder in her heart, did Betty Shelby pull that trigger and kill this man who what my eyes tell me was complying. So this is why you have violent protests and non-violent protests. And it doesn't help when you have millions of people who don't want either, who just want to sweep everything under the rug and say everything is okay, and these people just complaining and nobody's enslaving them, when the fact is they are being enslaved, and not necessarily always along racial lines, even though they are targeted the most and they are the largest percentage of the slave population. But when you have black slave catchers, Hispanic slave catchers, Irish slave catchers, Protestant slave catchers, Catholic slave catchers, Jewish slave catchers, Muslim slave catchers, then that lends to people not accurately describing what's going on in all of this participation of everybody in slavery of different backgrounds and different ethnicities, different religions, but they coming together to practice slavery and profit off of it. Oh, they definitely unified under the flag in the defense of slavery. So again, these battle lines need to be drawn on justice versus injustice, versus slavery versus freedom. Which side you on? That's my program for today. We'll be back on air tomorrow night, 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time, New Abolitionist Radio, with Max Parthas, Yohanan Elijah, if he's able to make it, and myself. But coming up at 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time, in just about 10 minutes, will be Tando Radio Show, hosted by Brother Dave. So make sure y'all stay tuned for that. So that's my broadcast for today. Make sure you share the podcast. And don't forget, if you think that black radio stations matter, if you think black media matters, if you think that black media ownership matters, please make a donation to blacktalkmediaproject.org, the North Carolina-based nonprofit organization that manages blacktalkradionetwork.com, blacktalkradio.mediaproject.org, where you can find services if you want to become a broadcaster or are already a broadcaster using Shoutcast and Icecast streams. Also have radio engineering services for those less technically inclined. So just everything that we can do to fund and produce black media, you can support it. Also, with $25 donation, and get a Black Radio Stations Matters t-shirt as a thank you gift, or get a membership to our new social media platform launched by the Black Talk Media Project, another safe digital space for black folks behind these enemy lines of USA Inc. And that is btrcommunity.com, btrcommunity.com. That is ad free, no ads. Since there's no ads, there's no data mining to sell you some ads or use that as an excuse to dig into your personal messages and what have you. So that's btrcommunity.com, a subscription. It's just $24 a year. Try it out, $5 a month. If you like it for that $5 that month, cancel that. Do the $24 a year, and then you good. You know, $24 a year. That's the best value, I feel. But we have those other options. So definitely, if we're going to have true independent media, we have to fund it. It cannot be funded by entities outside of the community or by people that may not have our interests at heart, even if they look like us. That said, peace and blessings to all. Defensive living is the best. Keep the head on the swivel. Be safe.